This is an AI-generated summary of Hansard for Thursday, 20th June, 1901. The House of Representatives. The sitting began with questions to the Prime Minister, Edmund Barton of the Protectionist Party representing Hunter, regarding government business. Sir William Macmillan asked Mr. Barton about corrected copies of Hansard. Mr. Barton explained the plan to issue galley proofs to members for review before a revised, bound copy is issued. Mr. James Page asked if Parliament could relocate to Sydney because of dissatisfaction from members of the Victorian Parliament about sharing the building. Mr. Barton responded that arrangements would be made to accommodate the Victorian Parliament. King O'Malley then inquired about moving Parliament to Hobart, offering the State Parliament House. Mr. Barton quipped that such questions required advance notice. Richard Crouch asked where to find the Governor-General's instructions and if they would be published. Mr. Barton confirmed they were laid on the table and would be gazetted. Alexander Poynton asked whether the cost of Victoria's penny postage would be borne equally by all states. Mr. Barton said this was a legal question under consideration by the Cabinet. Vibin L. Solomon of the Free Trade Party asked about railway pass costs for members. Mr. Barton requested that notice be given of the question to allow the Minister for Home Affairs to respond. Dugald Thompson of the Free Trade Party questioned the Minister for Home Affairs about life assurance policies for public servants, including premiums at different ages and with loadings. Alfred Deakin, representing the Minister, replied that inquiries had been made. Sir Edward Braddon inquired whether the Minister for Trade and Customs had assured Tasmanian jam manufacturers of fair treatment regarding sugar rebates. Charles Kingston, Minister for Trade and Customs, stated he could not give assurances related to the tariff, but would consider written communications. Sir Langdon Bonython asked about the government's intentions regarding the Northern Territory of South Australia. Mr. Barton stated that the government desired to take over the territory on suitable terms and conditions. George Cruikshank asked whether a duty would be imposed on type, considering the Australian origin of its materials. Mr. Kingston declined to indicate intentions before the tariff's introduction. Francis Clark asked about preparing returns on maize and timber imports and exports. Mr. Kingston agreed to returns for maize and timber, but noted the difficulty of collecting information regarding sawmills. After these questions, Donald Norman Cameron from Tasmania offered a personal explanation regarding the legality of members being sworn in. He stated his intention either to submit the question to a third party for a final decision or to institute friendly proceedings in the Supreme Court. Mr. Watson interjected, questioning the relevance of Mr. Cameron's intended actions, and the Speaker cautioned Mr. Cameron to confine his remarks to a personal explanation. Mr. Cameron then moved for the adjournment of the House, with five members rising in support of his motion. Mr. Crouch raised a point of order, challenging Mr. Cameron's address to the Speaker as if he were not a member. Mr. Cameron asserted he had been sworn in, and the Speaker acknowledged that his motion was in order. Mr. Cameron thanked members for their support, assured the House that his proceedings would be friendly and not involve any penalties, and then withdrew his motion for adjournment. Mr. Barton then moved to postpone all government orders of the day until after notice of motion number one, which was agreed to. The House then debated Mr. Glynn's motion, stating that, in the opinion of this House, the Ministers of State should not, in addition to their salaries, receive the allowance of £400 a year payable under Section 48 of the Commonwealth of Australia Constitution Act. Mr. Glynn thanked the Prime Minister for giving precedence to his motion and stated that ministers had not drawn the allowances, noting the sacrifices made by those who held office. Mr. Barton clarified that ministers do not receive the allowance. Instead, it is credited against them rather than deducted from their salaries. Mr. Glynn acknowledged the correction, and Mr. Barton affirmed that this was a provision in the payment of members' bill. Mr. Glynn continued by citing practices in various Australian states where ministers do not receive parliamentary allowances in addition to their ministerial salaries. He also referred to debates at the federal convention. Mr. Kirwan noted that Western Australian members of parliament received £200 each, while Mr. Salmon clarified that the Western Australian sum is not statutory, but a lump sum credited against the parliamentary salary, which according to statute, cannot be drawn. Quoting the Prime Minister's comments from the Federal Convention, Mr. Glynn recalled that Mr. Barton had stated such matters should be considered by the Commonwealth Parliament. Mr. Conroy interjected that altering the arrangement would tamper with the Constitution Act, to which Mr. Glynn replied that the Constitution allows Parliament to make such provisions. Mr. McMillan added that a motion cannot be taken as parliamentary action. Mr. Glynn then compared the number and salaries of ministers in England, Canada, and the United States, arguing for economy in government spending, given there were no new sources of revenue. Several interjections followed along the lines of whether such economies were genuine or merely appearances. Mr. O'Malley commented about Canada having 7 months of snow, while other members debated the merits of the allowances and the implications of following practices from other federal systems. Mr. Dugald Thompson seconded the motion, expressing surprise that ministers permitted the matter to come before the House. He compared the allowance with various customs in different states. Mr. Ewing questioned the very point of paying an allowance to members, and Mr. Thompson responded that it was not remuneration for services, but a measure designed to prevent extravagance following federation. He noted that some ministers and members had opportunities to earn additional income outside Parliament. Mr. Hughes interjected that it was understood to be part of the business, but Mr. Thompson maintained that questions needed to be asked. Mr. Barton interjected, remarking that members were not fully aware of his engagements, and Mr. Thompson stated that ministers had already pushed the limits of the Act. Mr. Barton defended the ministry's conduct, stating that the House had been given the first opportunity to decide, and that the ministry would abstain from voting. Mr. King O'Malley noted that Canadian ministers receive sessional allowances, and Mr. Barton cited inflated estimates used by critics of federation. Mr. Thompson argued that the allowance was excessive, while Mr. Watson countered that the motion created a false appearance of economy and mentioned that an increase in members' salaries might be seen in the next parliament. In the later stages of the debate, further interjections and clarifications were made regarding parliamentary allowances and procedures. Some contributions became unclear and fragmented, with the discussion ultimately shifting from the specifics of ministerial allowances to broader considerations of parliamentary economy and constitutional provisions. The session concluded with ongoing discussions about the propriety of ministerial allowances and the need for reform in parliamentary remuneration practices. The Senate. Senator Sir Josiah Simon began by clarifying a previous statement regarding a ruling by the President, confirming that he had said accept rather than accept. Senator James Drake, the Postmaster General for the Protectionist Party from Queensland, then stated that the government would discharge the order regarding the appropriation bill and provide the Senate with expenditure items. Senator James Walker from New South Wales proposed that the Standing Orders Committee frame a standing order for daily prayer. In response, Senator Gregor McGregor expressed dissent, arguing that religion belongs in the heart rather than displayed on one's coat sleeve. This led to interjections, with Senator James Stewart defending the proposal, Senator Robert Best commending it and decrying hypocrisy, and Senator George Pearce supporting its limitation to the Lord's Prayer. Senator William Higgs moved that no member of federal parliament or anyone within 12 months of ceasing to be a member should be appointed to an office that would render them ineligible to be chosen or to sit as a member. He cited concerns about political appointments and potential corruption. In reply, Senator Robert Best asserted that there was no such thing as political corruption, while Senator Thomas Playford remarked on their sincere desire to serve the country. Senator Stewart countered that the proposal simply meant political patronage. Debate continued as Senator Edward Harney opposed the motion on the grounds it was based on a dog-in-the-manger principle, with Senator Anderson Dawson speaking in favour. Senator John Neild from the Free Trade Party of New South Wales moved to table the return with particulars of the Senate election for New South Wales, with Senator Drake assuring that all necessary information would be provided. Senator Drake then moved to have the supply bill order read. Senator Norman Ewing argued that the bill encroached on the privileges and rights of the Senate, and proposed that the inclusion of items set out in the first item of Division 22 of the schedule to the Appropriation Bill was contrary to the provisions of the Commonwealth Constitution Act. The session then turned to Clause 2 of the Post and Telegraph Bill. A series of speeches followed from Senators Drake, Simon, Stewart, Zeal, Gold, and Fraser on the most effective method of passing legislation and achieving the intended outcomes. Many later interjected brief remarks and expressions of agreement. The Senate then adjourned its initial proceedings for the day. On June 20, 1901, the Senate reconvened. The first order of business was the presentation and reading of a petition. Senator Lieutenant Colonel John Neild from the Free Trade Party asked Senator Drake if he would present the agreement between Victoria and the Commonwealth regarding occupancy of the Parliament building. Drake agreed to table the agreement when available. Senator Gregor McGregor inquired whether the government would enter negotiations with the South Australian government to allow the Commonwealth Parliament to utilise the commodious Parliament buildings of that state. Drake replied that no expressions of dissatisfaction had been received from Victorian members of Parliament concerning the building. Senator Staniforth Smith raised the issue of a delay in issuing corrected copies of documents. Drake explained that the delay was due to the additional workload of the Victorian government printer, and that revised copies were now being printed and would soon be distributed. When asked if any copies had been issued, Drake was uncertain and suggested that Senator Smith raise the question the following day. Senator Norman Ewing then addressed Section 22 of the Appropriation Bill, insisting that its inclusion was contrary to the Commonwealth Constitution Act and proposing a motion of disapproval. Senator Drake questioned the possibility of striking it out, noting concerns that such a clause would adversely affect smaller states within Australia. Senator James Stewart interjected with the remark, "They would have been horribly disloyal if they had not spent it," prompting Drake to respond that one of the larger states could outvote the others. Ewing maintained that senators should preserve their rights and not surrender them, while Stewart argued that the expenditure was incidental, much like postage. Senator Anderson Dawson added that the clause should preclude the payment to civil servants. Drake noted that he did not propose to consult the dictionary for the meaning of the word ordinary. Dawson countered with the query, "What is the meaning of yearly?" and referenced parliamentary authority from Great Britain regarding the concept of ordinary annual service. Senator Major Gould asked about special votes, and Senator Sir Josiah Simon queried, "Or any other item?" Senator Thomas Playford observed that all the expenditure was essential for the ongoing services, and in the strict sense, constituted ordinary annual expenditure. Senator Sir Josiah Simon then cautioned that interjections were inappropriate in discussions of such gravity, urging that the matter be considered on the loftiest plane possible. He referenced the British North America Act as being infinitely more applicable to the purely and strictly federal constitution of Australia. Senator Robert Best noted that the Senate was struggling to precisely define its rights and stressed that these rights must be maintained. Although there was disagreement over particular sums, such as £225 and £43,000, the debate centred on whether such items fit within supply bills. Best urged that we should have a conference with the representatives of the other House with the object of coming to an understanding. in order to avoid conflict. Senator Simon Fraser and others contributed their viewpoints, while Senator Neild was reported to have suggested a Masonic function. Senator Edward Harney remarked that as long as rights were expressly stated in the Constitution, they could not be destroyed by precedent, though they might be seriously hampered. Senator David Charleston called for a clearer financial definition, warning that altering the government's annual cost statements, including salaries, could materially interfere with the practical management of the executive. Senator Sir John Downer warned that asserting their rights in such matters might lead to trouble, and Senator Sir Frederick Sargood cautioned, "Do not let us make a mistake this time," urging that continuous and clear reiteration was necessary to educate their colleagues elsewhere. After extensive debate and numerous interjections, Senator Ewing moved to withdraw his motion, which the President accepted. Senator Drake then formally moved that a chairman of committees be appointed and that discussion on that appointment be postponed. Senator Sir Josiah Simon approved the motion. The President noted that he also had a report from the Standing Orders Committee on the matter. Brief further conversation ensued, during which Senator James Walker was given the floor to address the Senate. Senator Anderson Dawson then argued that the motion was fundamentally flawed. The President ruled that the matter be divided into two motions, and Dawson requested that the issue be reconsidered by the Senate, which it was following a vote. Attention then shifted to Supply Bill 2. Discussions encompassed the introduction of a new bill in its entirety, various budget items, and the rights of both houses. Senator John Downer suggested referring the details to a small subcommittee, but Senator Drake maintained that responsibility rested with the other house. Permission was subsequently granted to split the discussion, and a vote was taken. As the Senate prepared to adjourn for the day, Senator Drake suggested an instruction to the Supply Bill Committee to omit the words, "for the purpose of appropriating the grant made by the House of Representatives." He later disagreed with his own suggestion, and further conversation unfolded between Senators William Higgs and James Stewart. Senator Higgs argued, "If the private secretary to the vice president is worth $400 a year, I venture to assert that a member of parliament who attends to his duties properly is worth $800 a year." He contrasted the responsibilities of members of parliament with those of ministers' private secretaries. Reaching division number 9, subdivision 1, the meetings drew to a close and the Senate adjourned for the day. This has been a LaunchLab production. LaunchLab.com.au